And now, after years of planning, sweating, and going broke, here is the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle.
And it left the media.
Why they would give this man a podcast is anyone's guess.
And there is what could only be a bizarre coincidence or something else.
Welcome to the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle.
Trapped, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
Country music and fine moonshine. Finally, a podcast that lets it all hang out.
Let's level with America.
Got your boots? Ready for some whiskey?
These boots are made for walking.
One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
And now, the Boots and Whiskey Podcast with Jim Belisle.
Hey everyone, Jim here, Boots and Whiskey Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in today. It's been a while, it feels like. We had so many episodes before Christmas. We ran right into the first of the year with Ray Finn last week. And now we have episode 2 of season 9, which is like episode 677, it feels like. We have our friend, our good friend, our brother, Dallas Moore on the show today. It was a huge honor to have Dallas on the show. This is one of those episodes that I had wanted to have or have this conversation with for, God, well over a year, maybe even since I started doing this podcast. And I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't think I kind of have a lot of self-deprecation about this, but I didn't think I was worthy enough to talk to somebody like Dallas Moore, of all people. And, and a lot of that is because I look up to this guy. Not that I don't to my other guests or anything like that, but, you know, there's a level of respect there, right? And, I hold him to such a high regard. I always thought, well, what the hell? Why the hell would he want to talk to me? But he did, and he did not disappoint. He delivers on all angles and all aspects. What a great guy. I hope we can see him soon live. There's so much in this episode that I don't even really want to give much away. But if you know who Dallas Moore is, you know what to expect. If you don't really know who Dallas Moore is, sit back, relax. You're in for a hell of a ride. These stories might blow out everybody else that we've ever had on this show. So, Dallas, thank you for taking your time and chatting with us. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. If you're new here to the podcast, welcome. Without you guys, this podcast is not even possible. Go check us out on all of our social medias. Everything is at Boots and Whiskey Podcast. Our website is bootsandwhiskeyentertainment.com. And that's really it, guys. So thank you again for being here. We greatly appreciate you. We got some, what do we got? I don't think we have anything this weekend coming. January's slow for us, which is okay. I'm okay with that. But we got some things I think we're working on to come out soon. I think if you've been listening to us for any amount of time, we've been talking about the whiskey side of this for years now, it feels like. And this year, I think we're really going to jump into the whiskey world. And if you're listening to your however many episode, you heard me say that at the beginning of 23 too. But long story short, just stay tuned. So really, without further ado, guys, I want to send it over to our conversation with Dallas. Again, Dallas, thank you so much for taking the time and being here with us on the Boots and Whiskey Podcast. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. Enjoy the episode, guys.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, I got you back.
All right, cool. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you? The last thing I heard you say was it's getting cold here, and I was asking where you was at.
yeah, it's cold. We're in Massachusetts.
Okay.
And, it's starting to become winter, apparently.
Who would have thought that for January in Massachusetts? I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio, and we got the same here, but you're probably a little bit colder than we are.
yeah, you know, they're calling for snow this weekend, and I'm not mentally prepared for that.
Are you feeling any better you said you had a little bit of a bug that was going around?
Yeah, today is actually the first day I've actually felt like a normal person since Friday. So that's
all right. That's well, good. We'll kick the new year off right.
yeah, Yeah, man. Well, thanks for being on the show and so quickly and so eagerly. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. I got a text from old JR, the handler. Yeah. He said, you need to call old Jim and get on the Boots and Whiskey and podcast. And I said, well, where do I sign up for that?
Yeah. You know, because I was talking to him and he was like, oh, I'm going to text Dallas right now. And I was like, no, you're not. And he's like, nope, it's already done. I was like, well, all right. Sounds
That's
good
awesome, man. I appreciate it, man.
I appreciate you, man. I've been wanting to get you on this show since I started this thing.
Man, that's awesome.
So you're in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah.
Is that where you're from?
Yeah, I'm originally from Norwood, Ohio, which is what they call the city within a city because it's actually in the middle of Cincinnati, Ohio. But they always had so much industry and factories and everything within Norwood that it was always its own city. You know, that's why my dad, Dallas Moore Sr., he moved up from Kentucky and my mom, Maggie Lee, her and her family moved up from Kentucky. Like so many people that moved up from the southern states to find work, you know, in the 40s and 50s. And I believe my mom's family moved up here in 1941. And then my dad moved up after he got out of the Korean War. And of course they had the family home there, you know, for all of my life growing up, you know, until my parents passed away 6 years ago. And, but yeah, so I come from Norwood, Ohio, but we usually just say Cincinnati cause that's where most people, you know where that's at.
Yeah. Now, so how does a kid like you growing up in Ohio, you know, end up, you know, singing real country music?
Well, there's a whole lot of great country artists that came from Ohio. David Allen Coe, Johnny Paycheck, Bobby Bear, and Earl Thomas Conley, and you know, many more. I'm sure I'm leaving some out, but those are ones that have kind of been my influences in direct orbit. But my main influence in music was my mama, Maggie Lee, and she came from Leeko, Kentucky, and when her family moved up here, I think she was 5 or 6 years old, and she went on to be one of the world's most prominent mountain dulcimer players, and she played Appalachian bluegrass and gospel music, and she was on the Midwestern Hayride in the early 1950s, and I still have her old 78 records from back then that she recorded historic Herzog Studio, which is here in Cincinnati, there were so many great historic country music recordings made here in Cincinnati at Herzog, including six of the cuts from Hank Williams Sr. were done here in Cincinnati. That's where he recorded I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry and My Bucket's Got a Hole in It and Lovesick Blues and several other tracks were actually recorded here in Cincinnati because they had historic Herzog Studios, which we ended up making my Hank to Thank album, which featured Jody Payne, who was my godfather from Willie Nelson and family. He came up and recorded that live album we recorded it live at Herzog Studios. I believe that was 2011 or 12, I think. But it was the 61st anniversary of when Hank Sr. had recorded here in Cincinnati. So and we were kind of carrying on that, honoring that tradition and making a live album, you know, and we got my mama, Maggie Lee, to join myself and Jody Payne, which actually Jody graduated from Norwood High School, which was a crazy connection that we ended up having that I had no idea of that, and neither did my mom. But I was on tour back in the 90s with opening some shows for Willie Nelson, and most of the shows had been in Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana. And I ended up on a show at Fort Lewis Army Base out in Tacoma, Washington. And because of the military protocols, everybody had to eat together. So I'm sitting there having our lunch, catering, whatever, you know, with Willie Nelson and family. And they were all my heroes, of course, not just Willie, but, you know, the whole family band was my probably some of my biggest influences, you know. And Willie said to me, he said, "You're a long way from Kentucky, ain't you, son?" Because that's where they was used to seeing me, you know. And I said, "Yeah." And Jody Payne said, where are you actually originally from?" And I told him, "Norwood, Ohio," you know, right there in Cincinnati. And he about dropped his plate of lasagna because that's where he had graduated high school from. And it was so crazy the way that all happened. And so I came home from that trip, told my mama Madge Lee all about it. And she said, "Well, that's crazy." It's to find out, she said, "What year did he graduate?" Come to find out, it was the year before she did. And she went running upstairs and grabbed this old dusty yearbook and brought it back. She said, "Are you playing any more shows with them guys anytime soon?" I said, "Yeah, in 3 weeks I'm playing a show in Terre Haute, Indiana with Willie Nelson and family, the Amazing Rhythm Aces, and Leon Russell." And she said, "Well, here, take this to Jody." He said, "I'm never going to need this old thing. He might get a kick out of it." So I took this old yearbook that he never got because he went straight into the Army as soon as he finished high school. He never got his yearbook, and I took it to him. And you'd have thought I was giving him a brick of gold, you know, from Fort Knox or something. And he told me right there, he said, "Man, that Brother Dallas," he said, "you're one of those cats that could be like my brother or my son. So I guess that makes me your godfather." And that's how Jody Payne became my godfather by choice.
And, awesome.
But that all traces back right here to Norwood, Ohio, in Cincinnati, you know. So there's, you know, just a lot of connections and a lot of great music came through. With the Herzog connection, there was also so many great bluegrass and country artists that recorded here in Cincinnati. The song Flat and Scruggs with a Foggy Mountain Breakdown was recorded here. You know, just so many big things that people don't usually associate with Cincinnati, Ohio, you know. But all that stuff happened here. They've got a real good great thing with the Cincinnati USA Music Heritage Foundation, which is which came on right before we did the Hank to Thank live album at Herzog Studios. And but there's also so much great country music came from here, but also like all King Records was also here as well, and that's where like all the original James Brown music was recorded, and that was the label that it was on. And Cincinnati USA Music Heritage Foundation is their mission is to preserve, you know, the history of all the music that came out of Cincinnati, with across all the different genres, of course. And but also to keep encouraging new music to be made, you know, that's coming out of here. So there's a whole lot of stuff, you know, that's come from this area and from Ohio in general, with like I say, the artists that I listed earlier. Of course, most prominently for what I do, my biggest influences and heroes, champions, friends were David Allan Coe and Johnny Paycheck, you know. And as David says in his one song, he's an Ohio boy. So that's where it all started for me. And then I've lived in several places over my life, including in Kentucky and Charleston, South Carolina. And for about the last eight, I think 2024 is going to be 9 years starting now. I kind of had a dual residency, because I've had what I call my natural second home in Universal City, Texas, which is down in San Antonio. And I wrote a song about kind of having a dual residency between Ohio and Texas called Texahio. And people would say, what state is Texahio? And I'd say, man, I guess it's a state of mind.
yeah absolutely. You know, it's wild, because you know, you tell all those stories, and you know I think people outside of Ohio, and maybe people that don't look into the music industry all too much, like, you know, you don't think, you know, recording and stuff like that, and you think Cincinnati of all places, right?
Right.
You know, you always think Nashville or Austin or LA or New York, or you know the big names, you know. But
right.
Just thinking about David Allan Coe, you know, I worked at a venue in my early 20s, and you know, when he was still on the road, and he would come through, you know, quite a bit, and it was always a sight to see. You know,
yes.
Yeah. You know, talk about a character just in himself, let alone, right, you know, anything else.
Right, Right. And I bet you never saw the same show twice.
No, God, no. Nope.
I had a great relationship and still do with David. I first met him and opened my first show for him, I think when I was probably about 19, I was either 19 or 20 years old. And it's back when Danny Shirley, Confederate Railroad, it was before they were Confederate Railroad. They were his band at the time. Yeah. And I met him and I think I was 19 or 20. I know I wasn't 21 because we were underage and we weren't supposed to be in the club he was playing. But we found our way into the place and got to meet Danny and David, and that struck up what's been turned into a lifelong, you know, friendship that still carries on to this day. Of course, they were the Danny Shirley band at that point, and they had yet to cut their album and come out as Confederate Railroad. But before that, they were Johnny Paycheck's band. They came out and opened the show, and then David came out, and I ended up meeting them, and then. From then on, I started opening shows for them, and all through the 90s and all the way up until the last show that I played with David was in November of 2020. And it was a show that had been rescheduled three or four times because everything got shut down with the COVID and all of the lockdowns and everything in 2020. But the place was right out west of Cincinnati called the Blue Note. And the show, the fight finally happened in November. They were able to open up at a limited capacity. And they got the show in after five reschedules, you know, due to the shutdowns, and that was the last show that we got to do together, and it was a great one. But over all those years and all those shows, I mean, sometimes we were doing 50, 60 shows a year with him, you know. Yeah. as the opener, and he would many times either come out during my set and sing a song or two with me, or a lot of times he'd bring me out to sing with him on the encore, and we did shows, you know, all over America together, you know. That all started out right here in Ohio. You know, that first show where I met him was in Dayton, but we did a lot of shows together in Ohio and Kentucky. And then it just branched out to where we were actually touring with him for all those years. And during all those years, just like what I just said to you, I never saw the same change, never, ever saw the same.
We want to give a big thank you to our friends over at Off the Rails here in Worcester, Massachusetts. You can find them at offtherailsworcester.com. They have a great restaurant, a great music venue. They have everything you would want to feel like in Nashville right here in Central Mass. If you're ever in the area, check out the restaurant, check out the music venue. Again, offtherailsworcester.com, 90 Commercial Street, Worcester. Check them out.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine. Yeah. You know, God love them, right? And I, that's going to be a sad day, right? But it was never really the same crowd either. You know, it was, it was a similar crowd. You know, don't get me wrong, but it was, you know, it wasn't just a crowd of a certain age, if you will.
Right. I was just getting ready to chime in with you there. That, you know, his crowd, like many legacy artists, you know, Willie Nelson, of course, it's still going on so many of your legacy artists, it's and it was neat for me to be a part of seeing the change in the crowd, because you ended up literally with people from all walks of life that crossed over generations. As the longer time went on, you know, you'd be playing shows and then 10 years later you'd have folks coming with their kids, and then you'd end up with their grandkids coming, right. You know, right. And it's been pretty cool to see and be part of that, you know, for a lot of my heroes. I got to be a small part of you know, tagging along and get to join in on a lot of that and see it happen. And then now that I'm older, now I used to be the kid. Now I'm one of the old guys. And now I'm seeing that, you know, at my own shows. I've got people that have been following me for 30 years, and now they're bringing their kids and sometimes grandkids. grandkids out to see a Dallas Moore show, and it's really, really cool. And I never refer to anybody as fans. I feel like everybody that we come across with becomes our family and friends, and it's been pretty awesome to see that grow over the years, and it just keeps getting bigger, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you talk about these legacy artists, because it's, you know, in my time at that venue I had worked at, you know, I get to see a few that I didn't, you know, being in my early 20s and not really caring about, you know, other than getting a paycheck and getting out to the bar as fast as I can, you know, I didn't care, right? But I wish I would have realized the magnitude of, you know, who David Allan Coe is and was, you know, and, you know, even with like Leon Russell, you know, I had seen Leon a few times again.
Had no idea.
You know, I knew who he was, obviously, but it wasn't, you know, the impact on music was not at the forefront.
Right.
You know, so now it's, you know, doing this and all that, you know, those legacy artists are becoming, unfortunately, less and less. And it's like, anytime they come this way, it's like, well, I got to see them because be the last.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? get it while you can, man.
Right.
Those memories and that music will last you a lifetime.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we've seen Willie now the last 2 years.
And,
you know, I've said it a few times where Willie was great last year, you know, but I thought he sounded better this year at 90 than he did last year.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That is so great.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was really great, you know, and we've got we got both Cephas finally coming up here in the summer, so we'll hopefully be getting to see him. And because again, another one of those artists that doesn't come up here, and you know, he's also getting older too.
Right. You got to catch him when they're in your neck of the woods.
Right.
Always go to the show.
That's right. Always go to the show and never miss a Sunday show. That's for sure.
That's right.
So now for you and your career, for, you know, everything you've done, and you know, I'm not trying to shortchange it at all, but do you contribute a lot of your success to getting into those, you know, David Allan Coe shows in the beginning and opening those up and expanding your audience?
Oh yeah, definitely. That was definitely a big boost and everything, especially early on. But everything has changed so much over the years. I'm 53 years old now, you know, and feel like I'm just getting started.
Right.
Because I'm getting ready to come out with my 18th album. I actually start working on it tomorrow, but up to now I've had 17 album releases, and the business of just the recording and the music business in general, but especially the touring and everything, has changed so much from what I started out with and what I came up with through the late 80s and the 90s and even all in the early 2000s stuff. But the independent music scene has just exploded. And I was able to, I had already been around forever, you know, but I never did sign with a major label. I was offered several major label deals in Nashville in the 90s and early 2000s, but they were all bad deals. And so I always, for good, better, or worse, you know, I always decided to stay out on my own and just kind of built my own house, as I would always say. And there might have been some things that I missed on that, but I don't really think so. I think everything happens, you know, when and how it's supposed to. But back in the 90s, when I was doing those shows, touring with, you know, so many of my heroes, Dave Allan Coe, Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, the Allman Brothers, Lynyrd Skynyrd, the Marshall Tucker Band, you know, and so many more. And that just kept Merle Haggard and George Jones. I got to tour with them. And that introduced me to a lot of people. But if you didn't have the access to the internet or being an independent touring artist out on my own, like I do now, so a lot of times you would make the connection with those people in whatever town you're in, but they couldn't go right away and get on your Facebook and, you know, sign up and keep track of you. A lot of times, you know, it would be okay, you was the guy that came out and opened up the show, and then you know, they may have, if you're lucky, they may have bought a CD or anything. That was before vinyl had come back. And so all we had to sell back then was t-shirts and CDs, you know?
Yeah.
So you might make a connection with somebody in that way, but building the grassroots audience that way was a lot harder back then because people were not as connected, you know? Yeah. So a lot of times you were in and out of each town, a different place every night. And then you may or may not see those people again. But it did expose me to a larger audience, and we did pick up some folks along the way that have been with us all these years, you know. But now with the advent of, you know, everything being so wide open and open to independent artists and touring and making your own records and everything like that, the way that's all come, it's really just continued to grow and snowball with each album release and with each, I don't know if you want to call it a tour or not. I always say I'm always on tour. This year, when I just played New Year's Eve, was 306 shows that I played in 2023.
Holy
and that's
shit.
I think that's the 11th year that I played over 300 nights in a year. So
do you ever sleep at home?
Hey, well, I do about quite a bit, you know, when I get a chance. I had yesterday off for New Year's Day, and I'm starting my 2024 Dallas Moore tour tonight with the solo acoustic show. I have six shows in Ohio and Kentucky starting this week, you know, and we're off and running for everything. And this year is looking to be our biggest year, ever. And the 306 shows, that I did in 2023 was actually taking a step back because last year I took my first vacation in 20 years. And I actually took my daughter to see Mickey Mouse for her sixth birthday and went back to my old stomping grounds in Charleston, South Carolina for a week, you know, with my wife and daughter. And my wife and daughter, they also get to travel with us quite a bit. My wife, Jenna Danielle Moore, she's my business partner, and she runs the whole business. And I always say she's the go and I'm the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And our daughter, Victoria Lee, she is 6 years old, and she's playing the piano and the guitar. And she comes out when they're able to come out on the road with us. She comes out and sings and plays guitar with us on some songs. And, you know, it's really, really cool. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's just a great thing. But I have a song called Home Is Where the Highway Is. So every night I get to sleep in my home, in wherever my home is, but it's somewhere different a lot of time. But I do have a place we call home in Cincinnati and in Universal City, Texas. And so I get to sleep in those beds quite a bit, as much as I can.
That's awesome. That's great. Now, so for what you're doing, you know, you just said you're working on a new album starting tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
You just put out, oh, Jesus Christ, my brain is just fried.
No God in Juarez.
No God in Juarez, yeah.
Yeah. Thank
you. Now, the stuff you're putting out, is this stuff that has been played out? Is this stuff that is all new, nobody has ever heard it before?
Well, there's a couple different things in the works. For the No God in Juarez album that was released on June 4th, 2023, that was actually 20 years in the making, and it featured all songs that were written by my original Honky Tonk Hero, Billy Gantt. Mm. And I had been telling Billy for over 20 years that at some point I was going to do an album of all songs that he had written. And finally, after all these years, the stars and our schedules aligned and I was able to do it. And so the No God in Juarez album featured all songs written by Billy Gantt. And Billy, just a quick backstory on him. I met Billy when I was 17 years old. I snuck into a little honky tonk in Norwood, Ohio. And, cause I'd always heard his name on the local radio stations and Billy Gantt and the Vigilantes. But I was not prepared at all for what I was about to witness. You know, I snuck in, 17 years old on a school night, and this place is just packed, this little honky tonk called Doty's Lounge. And here's this guy, and he's dressed head to toe all in black leather and has this big Johnny Paycheck style cowboy hat. And all the bands that were a house band back in those days, had a bunk, what they called a bunkhouse rail, you know, up across the front of the stage with the old wagon wheels and everything and the thick wood. And here Billy takes his hat off, stands on his head, and does a shot of Jim Beam upside down and does a backflip off of the bunkhouse rail. And he doesn't have a wireless microphone because those weren't really around much in those days, at least in the honky tonks they weren't. And he's got a 100-foot long microphone cord, and he grabs the two prettiest girls in the place on each arm and goes running through the crowd singing, and the whole place is just going berserk. And my mind was blown, and I said, I want to be this guy when I grow up, you know. And he took us under his wing that night. He told her they were going to kick us out because we were only 17 years old, and he told everybody that we was his kids. So he let me and my little band, which I just got my first guitar a few months before that when I was 16, we were literally just learning how to play, and he led us up on stage in front of his whole packed house, and that began, you know, over a 30-year friendship, and of him being a hero, champion, friend, and mentor. And Billy went on, and he was at the height of his game. He's touring with Hank Jr., David Allen Coe, Johnny Paycheck, Ernest Tubb, the Oak Ridge Boys, and many times he just developed this reputation as the most charismatic, you know, entertainer. And it was like watching James Brown do outlaw country music, you know. Yeah. And he was right at the height of his career when many times he was stealing the show from whoever he was opening for, because it was just so wild. Nobody had seen anything like it at that time.
Yeah.
And right at the height of his success, he was in an automobile accident that he was T-boned by somebody that ran a red light. And he suffered a traumatic brain injury, and he was in a coma for many, many years. And it actually took him 13 years of being away from the music. He had to go to rehab and learn to walk and talk and everything again. And before the accident, he'd written a few songs, but, you know, not a whole lot. He was mainly known as an entertainer, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And after that, something happened to him in that coma and that traumatic brain injury, when we came out, he just became this prolific songwriter. And so I've been telling him for 20 years, because he's still around and he's in better shape now than he's been for a long, long, long time. And I've been telling him, you know, that I was going to do a record of all his songs for all his time, and we finally got around to it with No God More. And Billy is here to experience it and enjoy it and take it all in. And so that's how we came out with the No God More Is album. And that what's led us to now, which gets back to your original question of what's the next thing going to be. I actually have two for sure, and possibly three albums that I'm going to be working on in 2024. The first of which is going to be my very first solo acoustic record. And it's just going to be me and my old guitar, and which is actually the guitar I'm going to use on it is my Mama Mangelis old guitar. And it's the guitar she used on all of her recordings. And I've used it on everything that I've recorded probably since around the late 90s. And it's just got a little magical sound to it, you know, and I feel like she's playing along with me, you know, when I use that guitar. So I've done acoustic records before, but nothing that was just totally stripped down, just me and my guitar. And I'm going to call this album Gems.
With keeping that Central Mass vibe going, we have to thank our friends over at the DCU Center. Again, here in Worcester, dcucenter.com. They are the premier venue here in Central Massachusetts. They are a mid-size arena. They're the home of the Worcester Railers, the Massachusetts Pirates. Numerous concerts, numerous events. Check them out, dcucenter.com. They are at 50 Foster Street, right here in Worcester. Cheers.
And jams. And it's going to feature a lot of the songs that I wrote and released back in the 90s that have been out of print since, I think, 2002. So most of the stuff is over 20 years old.
The record label that I was on back in the 90s went out, I think, in 2002. And so, but I still own and wrote all of those songs, and the songs still hold up, but a lot of folks have not heard them, you know, ever. And the folks that remember them from 20 years ago, I keep getting asked, hey, man, are you ever going to redo this song or that song? And I've also been getting a lot of requests. Hey, are you ever going to do a solo acoustic record? Because I do a lot of solo acoustic shows. You know, it's just me and a guitar. Yeah. And I've never made an album that just represents that and what it sounds like, you know, without all the bells and whistles and everything. And it's just me and my guitar. And I was driving back from California, tour of California last October. And was driving back across the New Mexico desert. And it just kind of came to me that the Gems and Jams concept and the solo acoustic concept should be the same album. So I was like, oh, wow, I should just make it like that. So I'm going to be doing these new versions of these old songs the way I originally wrote them, with just me and a guitar. And the other songs that will be included on it, I've got a handful of things that I never, ever recorded or released in any fashion. And so those are going to be included in this as well. So I'm excited to get in the Soul Record Studio tomorrow and start working on this. And then the other projects I have enough material to do another full band recording, and I'll be doing that as well. And then there's enough Billy Gantt songs together for me to do another batch of Billy songs, and me and Billy have already started working on that, as far as fleshing out the songs. And we haven't started recording it yet, but we always start my projects with Billy. We started sitting around his kitchen table and him pitching me his songs. And when I was over there the last time, he had 33 new songs that I did not record for Juarez. And they're all equally as good as that. And they go together kind of in a different way. So I've got a whole lot of new music that I'm getting ready to get out for everybody.
Damn, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for that.
So it's real, real exciting. I'm trying to keep up with Willie.
yeah. No shit. You know, and it's wow. Like, I'm just amazed at how much you have and how much you're doing. You know.
Yeah.
And not in a bad way. Just like, it's, you know, because you don't hear about it. You don't hear like, oh, well, I could put out three records this year, no problem.
Right.
You know, a lot of the younger kids are like, well, you know, I have enough for a record.
Right.
You know, yeah. And it's like, cool.
Well, you, a lot of times that's the way it's been for me. And sometimes it wouldn't be, you know, every year, you know, sometimes there'd be a gap, but we've always been consistent, you know. I think my first album came out in, I believe, 1996. My hero's always been Cowboys. And ever since then, like I say, it's been 17 albums between then and 2000 and No God in Juarez in 2023.
Damn.
It's different on the way, you know, everything comes to you. I've been blessed to, you know, have this much material, and also I've been doing a lot of co-writing as well as writing my own stuff, and then you got the whole thing with Billy Gantt. So when you start stacking all that up, it leads to a lot more songs to be sung.
Yeah, it's wild. It's so wild. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, when you get to a place, especially, you know, when you've been in an industry like this, you know, of all things, as long as you have, and seen what you have seen, and, you know, done things with the people you've done with, you know, it's, I can only imagine, you know, country music's all about telling a story, right?
Right.
And how many actual stories that there are. You know, and that you have to tell. Yeah. You know, you could probably just never live another, not actually, but, you know, never do a thing and sit in solitary confinement for the rest of your life and still have enough stories to tell that, you know, would be wild.
Everybody keeps saying I should write a book. but I would want to incriminate anybody this soon in our relationship. But you never know. There's many I've got many stories that I could tell, and we just keep on making new music and making new memories, and those are the stories that we'll be telling, you know, in the days to come. Is what we're doing, what we're doing now. Right now we're making new stories every day. I've got a lifetime of them, you know.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm sitting here talking to you, and you just, you know, you're name dropping these people that, you know, have become, you know, legends to me, you know, and to, I think, everybody else in the music world, or at least in the country music world. And, you know, you talk about it like they're old buddies. And I love that. And I love that about, you know, what country music is, you know, still, and what it used to be.
Right. Right. You know, I've been very, very blessed over all these years. Probably one of the coolest things in the world is when your heroes become your friends. And right. I've been very blessed that's happened to me, you know, many times throughout my life and career. And it continues to happen. And a lot of those old friendships are still going strong and it's kicking the can a little further down the road.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now
making new friends, you know, all the time too. I mean, so
you're always making new friends no matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
Now when was the last time you were up this way?
Let's see, last summer we played in New York City at Hill Country Barbecue, and we played on Long Island Sound on the Connecticut side, and we played the Broadbrook Opera House in Connecticut. And then we also played, we headlined, the 45th anniversary of the Harley Rendezvous in Pattersonville, New York. So that was which was really cool to do that. We had played the Rendezvous several times, opening for, Charlie Daniels and Molly Hatchet and Blue Oyster Cult, I believe, one year. And, we had always opened up, but on the 45th anniversary, it was our first time to be the Saturday night headliner. And so that was always great, because we love our family and friends up there at the Harley Rendezvous, and looking forward to coming back there again one of these days. But that was as far northeast that we got last year was New York and Connecticut.
All right.
Well, now we're planning on coming back up that way again this summer, but I don't have the dates, but we're in the middle of booking our northeast dates right now, so hopefully we'll be getting up to see y'all maybe in July and August.
Good, because I gotta see you live. I gotta,
yeah, it's, yes, it's, for sure.
it's on the to-do list for sure.
All right.
You know, because we don't get a lot of that outlaw, real, you know, what I call real country sound. You know, it's all, you know, and because it's popular, it's all that, you know, that radio friendly.
Right, stuff. Right. Yeah.
You know, which has its place and is great.
It does. Yeah. There's room for everybody, I just keep doing my thing, and everybody else does theirs, and sometimes those things intersect, and you make new friends, and they have some good shows, and it all works out. There's room for everybody, I reckon.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you know, with your success and how much you do and all that, how much of this has been a surprise for you in the last, you know, 30 plus years? 30 plus. Well, I thought I'm such an asshole. I'm so sorry.
All of it. Every bit of it. It's like everything that happens, it's always a surprise, and it's always like, wow, I can't believe we're getting to do this, you know?
Yeah.
And it's still that way. After traveling, several million miles, you know, over the years, you know, on the old van, or vans, plural, I should say, all the shows, all the miles and everything. And it's still like, there's always something new that's a surprise that you never dreamed of that would happen or that you would get to do or experience. And it's kind of like being a kid on Christmas Day all the time.
Right, right. Now, are there, you know, in your, now at the point that you're at, are there places where you, you know, are you still looking to venture into markets that, you know, maybe you're not as much of a household name as you may be in Ohio and Kentucky and Texas?
Definitely. We go everywhere, and we're always looking for new places to play. I always say we play them all, big and small.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
we played the biggest crowd we've ever played for was 111,000 people. We were opening for Lynyrd Skynyrd in Louisville, Kentucky, and we've done several big festivals with, you know, monster crowds and everything like that, and we played four or five folks on a bar stool and everything in between. And it would, I never treat anything different, you know. Well, it doesn't matter if it's a big crowd or a small crowd or whatever. I'm glad to be playing, you know, and I want to play my music and meet everybody I can and play the music for everybody I can and always go new places and make new family and friends.
That's awesome. That's, fuck, man, it's so good. It's so good what you're doing and what you have done, you know. And it's, you know, it's funny. I've talked to a few people about, you know, you and getting you on the show and having you on the show. And, you know, there's local kids around here, local guys around here that, you know, play outlaw country that, you know, are awesome. Right. And yeah. You're always you and, you know, there's a few others that, you know, aren't on the radio, right? That are right. Always talked about. And, you know, it's awesome to see how influential, you know, somebody like you and the sound that you have and the stories you tell and the music you produce, you know, can still have such an impact in this world of, you know, country music that is, you know, ignored in the popular culture sense.
Right, right. Well, you know, it's so much, I'm glad to still be around and still doing it, to where, you know, like say I'm 53 years old now and feel like I'm just getting started, but I'm able to pass down, you know, a little bit of things some of the stuff that I've learned about what to do and what not to do.
Right.
And
right,
everything in between. Because I remember, you know, all of my heroes, so many of them that I've, you know, mentioned already, and many, many more guys like Ray Wiley Hubbard and Dean Dillon, you know, who are my heroes and always imparted such great knowledge and wisdom, and I always took the time to talk to me, you know, and encourage me. And so anytime I can do that, I always try to do that as well, because, you know, I'll never forget, you know, the influence and advice that they've provided me with, you know. And if I can do that, you know, for younger generation of singers and songwriters and musicians, then that's very important to me, you know. Because that's how we keep these traditions and this music alive, is you keep passing it on down through generations.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you mentioned Dean, and If I remember correctly from some things I've seen, you've played with him before, right?
Yeah, we played several shows together. In fact, we just, myself and Adam Hood, just opened up for Dean at a sold-out show at the Floribama in Perdido Key, Florida, for the Frank Brown International Songwriters Festival. And me and Adam Hood, who's a great another great friend of mine and a great songwriter and singer.
Now we're going to thank our friends on the North Shore, the Porch Southern Fair and Juke Joint. Our buddy Jonathan Post is the head chef and owner of The Porch. They are at 175 Rivers Edge Drive, right in Medford, Massachusetts. Don't want to miss this place. They have some of the best food in the region. Jonathan has brought his Nashville roots here to New England with the food, with the hospitality, and most of all, the music. Check them out. ThePorchSouthern.com.
Singer and performer, and Adam and I met originally through our friend Wayne, late great Wayne Mills. But after all these years, we had never played together. And the first time we shared a stage and swapped songs was opening for Dean Dillon at the song for a sold out show at the Floribama on the big tent. And it was just great. But Dean was fantastic as always. And I got a kind of a, I don't know if you have time for it, but I have a kind of a funny story about how we met.
Dallas, I have all the time in the world for you, my friend.
It was at the Floribama, and this was a few years. I can't remember the exact year, but it was I don't know, probably about eight. Seven or eight years ago, maybe nine. I can't remember. But anyways, I'd always be at the Floribama a few times a year, and I'd always miss Dean by like a few days. You know, either he had just been there and I just missed him, or he was going to be showing up to play a day or two after we left. You know, and so I kept missing him, and we were playing there. It was actually one of the Wayne Mills tribute concerts that they were having, and they were hosting. And myself and Lucky Chucky, who was my lead guitar player for 27 years, he passed away on November 4th of 2021 from his battle with cancer. But Chucky, on this date, he was playing with me, and we had the main room at the Floribama just packed out. And a great crowd for our set. And I'm sitting there playing, and I see Dean Dillon walk in the room. Oh. And he sits at the back. There were no seats available. He just stands at the back of the room, you know, and he watches our whole set. And then as soon as we got done, everybody was kind of on us, and we were trying to get out of, you know, off the stage, make room for the next act who was coming on. And by the time I got done talking to everybody and making our way out, Dean was already disappeared. He was already gone. And of course my phone had died. So I go across the street from the Floribama to where our van was parked at the old band house there, the old river house there. And, which is where I met JR the Handler back in the day, originally, by the way. And so I'm just parked there, and I've got my phone charging, and I'm calling my wife, to let her know. I was like, man, Dean Dillon was just at our show. I can't believe it. You know? And, I was so excited, you know? And she goes, well, did you get to meet him? I'm like, no, we got done with our set, and he was already gone, and my phone died. So I come on over here, and I'm noticing in my rearview mirror, Chef Billy Highland, who was the chef at the Floribama back in the day. He's running across the gravel parking lot there, and he's hauling ass towards the van. And I'm talking to my wife, and I was like, I'm telling her all about everything and how great it went. And I'm like, Chef Billy's making tracks running towards the van. I don't know what he's got going on. And he comes running up to the van, and I roll down the window, and he's huffing and puffing, and said, Mr. Dallas, Dean Dillon is here, and he wants to play his set now instead of in 2 days. He wants to go on stage and do an impromptu set right now, but he wants you to join him and do a song swap. I said, honey, I got to go.
Sorry. Something's come up.
So I go over there, and me and Chucky, Lucky Chucky, we get up and play. And I'm just over the moon excited, you know. I'm like, you know, man, this is a dream come true. I'm getting to do a song swap with Dean Dillon at the Floribama. And then reality set in. I was like, watch out what you wish for. Because I would play one of my bullshit songs, and he played Marina Del Rey. And I would play another one of my bullshit songs. He plays Tennessee Whiskey. And and this goes on for like an hour. And finally, he played the chair and put me out of my misery. And then we went back. He invited us back to his trailer, and we spent the night swapping songs and trading guitars and playing things that we wrote and everything, trying it out and getting advice and hanging out, and that's where we became friends. And we went on to play several shows, you know, together, you know, after that. And it's also where I met Mark Powell, who Mark was traveling with Dean at that time. And that was the first, and Mark also played the set with Dean and Chucky and I. But Mark Powell, he owns the Outlaws and Legends Music Festival in Abilene, Texas, which we've played before. And we played it in 2022. And we're returning to play it this year. And then he also owns the Seven Keys Lodge in Estes Park, Colorado. And I went up and did my first shows there, which was a songwriter thing that he had. We had two sold out shows at the Seven Keys Lodge with myself and Mark Powell and David Lee, who's another hero and just a great songwriter from down in Texas, who's a great friend of mine. But we had myself and Mark and David all together up in Colorado. And I think we're going to do that again this year as well. But again, talk about, you know, meeting your heroes and then carrying on that friendship. That's where I met Mark, was the same time that I met Dean. And now here we are, you know, 11 years later, however long it's been. And we're playing, I'm playing his festivals, you know, and we're co-writing songs together. And it's just wild how it all, everything just keeps connecting the dots, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny because it's like, you know, I would argue in the last couple of years, and maybe it's just me paying attention, right? But in the last couple of years, you know, you've heard the name Dean Dillon, you know, a little more in the lexicon, right? You know, if you ever studied country music, you know exactly who Dean Dillon is. And if you haven't, then I can't help you. because that's like not knowing who, you know, John Lennon is to an extent.
Right, right. Yeah, very much so.
You know, and it's wild what, you know, how quietly successful he has been.
Yeah, yeah. And he's still the coolest cat, you know, on earth. When he does his shows, you know, he just comes out and it's like you're literally sitting there with the icon, you know.
Right.
And Dean also is kind of like what we were talking about with David Allan Coe. Like every show that I've ever seen him do is different. He has such a volume of his catalog that, you know, of course every night would be different. It just depends on what song he, which of his, you know, great iconic, you know, songs that he wrote that he wants to play on any given night, you know.
Right.
And anything he's going to play, it's going to sound like a greatest hits thing, because that's what he's written. He has literally written the soundtrack to country music and, right, you know, and right, to all of our lives, you
right
know.
He's literally written every great country music song in the last 40 years.
it's just so crazy. And
it's unbelievable. It's
great. Like what we were talking about with so many other legacy artists, that you can still you can still go see Dean Dillon performing live, you know. Yeah. And whenever you get a chance, do it.
Hell yeah. If Dean Dillon ever came up here, that would be literally the first thing I would do. I don't care how much that would cost.
It's so great. And his story, that like you talked about the stories and everything. You think I got stories, you should hear Dean. But it's just when he's doing his show, you know, on a lot of levels, he lets the songs speak for themselves, but right, he does pepper his show with you know, a lot of stories. And I'm just sitting there on the edge of my seat, like, you know, more than any movie or any TV show or anything like that could ever do. I'm like hanging on every word that he says,
right,
you know.
But even those stories that, you know, you're like, oh, what's going to happen?
Yes, I know. I could have already heard it, you know, 50 times, and it's right, like you're, yeah, it's like, what's going to happen?
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's true, right, man.
It's like watching that Titanic. You know it's going to sink, but you know, you're still going to watch it again and again and again, because right, who knows?
Right. Well, you know, and he tells, you know, his whole story and his, you know, his songwriting heroes and stuff, you know, and, you know, meeting up with Hank Cochran and, you know, heading down to the Bahamas to live on a houseboat and write songs for a couple of years, you know, and all these other, hitchhiking to Nashville from where he was at over around Lake City, Tennessee, and, you know, when he was very young, I forget how old, I think he was like 16 or 17 or something like that, but you know, yeah, you know, his stories are just, they're just great. And it's so wonderful that you still have access to that, you know, yeah. And you can still go hear those stories and you still go hear and sing along with those songs. So it's pretty cool, man.
No, I wanted to ask you, you know, and I know, you know, again, I thank you for taking your time. And if you have a little bit more time, I got a few more things I wanted to kind of circle back on.
Right. On.
You know, you had mentioned, you know, you had been, you know, more or less kind of poached in the 90s for big record deals and didn't do it and all that sort of thing. Do you ever look back at any of those moments and kind of kick yourself on the ass for not doing it? Or are you pretty content with not doing it?
No, not at all. Cause that was saying no to a bad thing is the best thing you can do. Yeah. That may not have seemed that way at the time. You know, at the time, you know, you might have been questioning, hey, man, did we just miss the boat here? But in my case, you know, I was kind of advised and I was able to see a few of my friends that had been offered the same crappy record deals, you know, and I watched them go bankrupt and watched their bands and their families break up. And it was not a good thing. And I decided I would be better, for better or worse, I was going to build my own house and do it my way. Yeah. I have not had one regret over that, like, you know, at all.
And you probably built it a hell of a lot better than, you know, somebody else would have. That's for sure.
Well, nobody cares about how you're doing more than you.
That's right.
So, you know, I'm responsible for, you know, taking care of, protecting and providing for my wife and daughter and all of my family and friends and stuff like that. So I don't want, I'm very, very guarded about all of that as, you know, I have yet to meet anybody that I could, you know, trust and ensure that, that was going to do that for me, you know,
right.
It's not even a thing of like me being like a control freak or anything like that. You know, some folks have that in them and I'm not that way at all. I'm very much.
So I think I would be totally remiss if I didn't mention our friends over at 10thWhiskey.com. That's 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirit Company. They're out of Vail, Colorado. Great, great friends of ours. We don't like bourbon here at the Boots and Whiskey Podcast, and they make the absolute best bourbon I've ever tasted in my entire life. And I'm not saying that because they've been great to us. They have the best bourbon, the best rye I've ever tasted in my entire life. So check them out, 10thWhiskey.com. Tell them the Boots and Whiskey Podcast sent you. Cheers.
I'm all in the, I'm able to delegate stuff whatever musicians are playing with me, you know, I'm not like all, you know, hey, you have to do everything this way. You know, everybody's like a free open book, you know, I'm like, let's all show up and make some great music together, you know, and we'll all sound good, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it was just that kind of, you know, the way I looked at everything, you know, the kind of outlook, is why I've just kind of stayed the course, you know, through everything. And you know, we never, through all those years, a lot of times we would take baby steps and it would seem like things weren't really happening fast or as fast as, you know, some peers or friends or anything like that. I never had like a moment where like everything just went straight up to the moon, you know, and was like a life-changing, you know, overnight thing. I never did have that. And I think that's one thing that's made my foundation so strong now is I've just kept taking baby steps forward, you know, all these years. And I never, the whole time, I never even stayed like on a level thing, and I definitely never went backwards, but I was always moving forward. It was just a matter of sometimes those were baby steps, and then here lately it feels like we're running a pretty good sprint.
Yeah, man. I mean,
everything honestly, just, but I think I was able to build that foundation over these years, and I just and I I'm just continuing to build on the old house.
Yeah, and you know what? Honestly, whatever you've done and whatever you've learned over your career, like it, you know, I'm not just saying this because you're on the other line of this conversation, but you know, it's working. It has worked. It's working. You know, you're doing it the right way. You know, and you're doing it your way, and you're still making music that blows many people out of the water. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate it. We're always trying to come up with something new, and I take a lot of all of my influences from the past and my new influences and everything like that. And I just kind of, as far as both music and just life in general, you know,
yeah.
I just keep trying to get better, you know, as we go and just keep, like I said before, keep kicking the can a little farther down the road. I also wanted to mention too, that a big part of my journey, on this, it's especially since, I believe it was around 2007 or 8, I believe. I'm trying to think. Whenever I first hooked up with Brian DeBruler at Soul Records, when we came out with the Tales from a Road King album, which I think was 2007. I'm not sure. But that's when we reconvened. I had recorded my first album in 1996, My Heroes Always Been Cowboys, at Brian's studio, but he didn't have the Soul Records label at that time. So when I came back, I had recorded the Tales from a Road King album in 2007, I believe, with our friend Mr. K, Ken Glidewell, and we recorded it at his studio, and he was involved in a motorcycle accident and passed away, and that the album was not mastered yet. And right before he passed, he had put me back in touch with Brian DeBruler at Soul Records, and Brian was going to master the record for us, which he did. He ended up mixing and mastering it after Ken's accident. And that reignited Brian and my friendship and business partnership. And that's when we became joined at the hip with Soul Records, and that's what we've continued to do. And so he's been my business partner for all these years since, and a whole lot of everything that we've doing that is working is a lot due to all the hard work and everything that Brian puts in. But a lot of that would be considered by a lot of people to be behind the scenes, because he's not out on the road with me, you know, all the time. And you know, people don't always see what he's doing, but he's working his magic in not only in the studio, but also with helping me run all, because our whole thing is an independent operation, from our recordings to running all of our social media, to our websites, and you know, our online business, everything. And it's pretty much all these years has been me and Brian, and then also my wife Jenna Danielle Moore, since we got married in 2010. So that's our little team right there, you know.
It's awesome.
And but I definitely wanted to make sure that I mentioned get to talk about that, because a lot of times a lot of people, you know, they see me up there and I'm the one with the big mouth and jumping up and down and everything like that. But a lot of this stuff wouldn't happen without Brian and also with my wife Jenna Danielle Moore.
Damn, Dallas, it's been so good to talk to you, man. And before we go, and you know, I know you got a show tonight, which I look forward to hopefully seeing a show from you soon here,
right
up in the up in New England. I wouldn't come when it snows or when it's cold. Definitely stick between like,
yeah, you know, I'm shooting for July or all.
Yeah, Memorial Day to like Halloween isn't bad, but after that it's a shit show. Could be
right.
You know, because we are the Boots and Whiskey podcast, I obviously have to ask about your boots and your whiskey of choice. So, what kind of boots do you like to wear?
I'm for the most part, I wear Lucchese's.
Okay.
Okay. And I think actually right now, because I'm waiting on a new pair of Lucchese's to come in right now, I've got a pair of Dan Post on that I'm shit kicking around in right now. But
nice.
But I've been a Lucchese guy for many, many years. But my old pal down at Republic Boot Company in Houston, Texas, Bill G. Meeks, is also supposed to be working on a custom pair of boots for me. He made a pair of boots for Dean Dillon. I talked about Dean and Bill G. Meeks. So if Bill's listening, I'm going to be playing in Houston here in a couple of weeks, and I might be hooking up with him. But I want to give a shout out to Bill G. Meeks at Republic Boot Company in Houston, Texas. Other than that, I'm pretty much a Lucchese guy.
Nice. Now, what about whiskey?
Well, I've always been a pretty big whiskey drinker, but until here recently. But I've always I really dig the Eagle Rare. Eagle Rare is good, but my go-to daily drinker was always Jim Beam White Label. Yeah, we would, because they got it everywhere. Farther away from being so close to Kentucky, we always had access to, you know, all of the great bourbons, you know.
Right.
And I think we spent many years drinking anything too thin to eat.
Right.
But the farther away from Kentucky you get, everything gets a lot more hard to find, especially depending on where you're at in the honky tonks. But one thing you can always count on, no matter where you're at, they've got Jim Beam and Jack Daniels. And I was never really much of a Jack Daniels guy, although I would drink it if there was nothing else around.
Yeah.
But I was always a bourbon guy, you know. Back in the day, in the 90s, for a little while, when we were touring open for Merle Haggard, he had a George Dickel endorsement, and we got a Dickel endorsement out of it as well for a couple of years there. And so for a while there, we was drinking a lot of that. But after that was over, my daily drinker would be Jim Beam a lot of times, just because they had it everywhere we'd go, and it was easy to put on the rider because everywhere could get it. But I liked Eagle Rare, really good. There's at the Honky Tonk Hacienda at Big Mike Talley's place, which is where our natural second home is in University City, Texas. He has a grand bourbon cabinet that is just unrivaled. And he's got all of the different rare Wellers, and just pretty much anything. If it's hard to find it, and it's very hard to get that stuff in Texas, because they'll come around and they'll have like a bottle of a certain brand, but you'll have to get into a lottery to get
it,
you know. And so it's so rare and stuff. But yeah, you know, but I never had one a burden that hurt my feelings, though.
Yeah, no, I hear that. You know, I've had some that have hurt other people's feelings.
Yeah, but, yeah, might have some of that too.
Yeah, definitely none of that have hurt mine.
I used to always say, and now for my next parlor trick, I'm gonna make this fine Kentucky bourbon disappear before your very eyes. Right. Now you see it, now you don't. Poof, it's gone.
Right. Yep. Yep. Oh God, damn, Dallas. I hope we get to talk again soon. You know, when the albums start coming out, and you know you're pushing new music, man, we'll be right here for you. And
all right, sounds good.
Right along with you.
Well, thanks for having me on the Boots and Whiskey podcast, my good man. And,
anytime, man. Anytime.
We will see you down the road, and adios, amigo.
Absolutely, man. Your family here now, man.
All right. Thank you, brother. Appreciate
thanks,
it.
Dallas.
We'll see you down the road.
All righty.
Well, there you have it, everyone. Our conversation with Dallas Moore did not disappoint, right? If you sat through this episode and were like, "Well, these stories suck," then you suck, because these stories were fantastic. They were enthralling, unbelievable, literal country music legend we have on this show. The amount of history, the amount of knowledge this gentleman has is mind-blowing. And honestly, if I had half the contacts or knew half the people he knew, I would be making way more money doing this. honestly, he rattled off names on here that, you know, we kind of have contact with, sort of. You know, Willie Nelson, we've had Ray Lynn Nelson, Willie's granddaughter, on the show. We talked about Merle Haggard. We had Merle's bus driver, Ray McDonald, on what feels like forever ago. We're going to get Ray back in here. You know, and then a whole lot of other people. Dean Dillon, I would love. Dean Dillon is one person I would, if I had on this show, I think I would stop doing this, because I don't think you can top that. I don't think you can top that storytelling. But you know what? I mean, I say that, but he would be on, and then I would be so giddy that I would want to keep going and going and going. So Dean Dillon, if you're listening to this, please, would love to have you. Reach on out, or let us know how to reach out to you, and we'll get that done. So yeah, you know, guys, thank you again so much. Again, check us out on all of our socials, Boots and Whiskey Podcast on everything. Bootsandwhiskeyentertainment.com is the website. Again, guys, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. I think we might start going to 2 episodes a week coming up. I'm not sure, though. I haven't decided. Definitely going to stick with the 1 for now. So thanks, guys, so much. And, you know, as always, if you haven't been here before, if you can't tell, here at the show, it's all about real people, real stories, real country. And Dallas gave us all of those things this week, and we thank him so much for that. So until next time, guys, thank you again so much. I know I thank you a million times, but, you know, like I said, without you, there's no show. I mean, I could record these episodes all day long and talk to somebody, and if nobody listens, then what the fuck's the point? So thank you for being here. Until next time, guys, keep those boots on the ground and the whiskey in the glass. Cheers, y'all. We'll see you next week. Good night.